Hi guys, and welcome to the first ever episode of the Fire Mafia. This is the first episode of our podcast slash video series, which we're starting. We told ourselves we're going to try 3 episodes and see from there if we continue or not. So also that depends on you. If you enjoy it, give us feedback and yeah, let us know. So I'm here with my friend Giorgio, who has a lot more experience in the finance space than me. He's been investing for a much longer time. Yeah, I think we're going to start with an introduction, the two of us. Would you like to start?
Yeah, sure. Hi, guys. I'm Giorgio, also known as Mr. Rip. I have this blog, Retire in Progress. If you are here, you probably know it. And I'm an Italian who moved to Switzerland for work, and it's now try to find this place in this world, which will be probably not work anymore sooner or later. Who are you, Angelo?
Hi, I'm Angelo. I'm 30 years old, turning 31 very soon, which, yeah, time is passing very quickly. And
are you also from April?
Yes, I'm also from
April.
Oh,
me too. Now we discover we're born the same day.
Probably. Must be twins. Yes.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. A lot of finance bloggers are actually born in April. It's interesting. Also, I don't know. Do you know Graham Stephan also? He's also born
really?
In April.
Okay. Yeah. I know Graham Stephan. I didn't know he was born in April.
Yeah. Anyway. I'm Angelo. I live in Vienna and in Austria. And I'm also half Italian, which since we're both Italian, we call this the Fire Mafia. Just for fun.
Yes, exactly. But we wanted to have this podcast in English just to practice our English speaking and maybe reach more people than just the Italians. So welcome to the Fire Mafia. By the way, I'm from the third decade of April. You?
I'm from the first decade.
Ah, okay, so no twins. But I'm 43, turning 44 in a month. So, yes. Anyway, so what are we here for? How did we meet, Angel? Do you remember?
Yes. We first met at the Financial Independence Week, which was organized by some bloggers that now stopped blogging, but they were really nice enough to organize this really amazing event for several years in a row. And we met in Timișoara in Romania.
Yes.
And they set up a really nice longer weekend.
It was 2018, and that was my first the first and only five is Financial Independence Week Europe that the Whites were organizing. The writers at What Life Could Be, it has been an amazing week. I stayed there for a week. They hosted me a few days before, and I couldn't stay few days longer because my daughter was just born, so I had to go back home. But it's been incredible amazing experience. I'm part of this Fire movement also because you meet amazing people, and there are this kind of events which has nothing to do with the seminars that other fake gurus ask you 5,000 per weekend. I think we spent 100 euros.
It was the amazing part about it is that they were doing all of this basically at cost. So just what the place was costing, the worst
people were in the
hotels, and that was amazing.
Sure.
So no extra fluff.
No extra.
It was not for profit.
There were like 30 people probably in 2018. Sadly, I couldn't come in 2019. I heard that it was even a larger group. And then in 2020, it was shut down for obvious reason. And if you like financial independence and the FIRE topic, you should reach out some local communities that there are that many, but at European level there is the FIRE Hub group is the center of aggregation. Are you active in that community?
Not very active in the community, but I know it's great for finding links to all financial blogs, and they're doing a good job curating everything.
There is also some Facebook groups. There is the guys from the Financial Independence Europe podcast. They organized a couple of events, I guess. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we're talking about FIRE. We are the FIRE Mafia, but we are not mentioning it. What is it like the Fight Club? You cannot mention it.
I think you can mention it, but other than that, it's basically the same as Fight Club. Yes. A lot finance.
So, financial independence for those who don't know and are and follow us, so probably for nobody. Financial independence is the reaching the point where you can live off your passive income. Well, what do you think?
Yeah, it's officially you reach financial independence when you can just live off your investments and basically the income your investments are generating, or if you have, or by selling a small part of your investments basically every year.
Yeah.
And the goal is to not reduce the long term, to not reduce the invested amount over the long term, so that you can basically live off of that forever or for a certain time frame. Maybe if you're 80 already or something, say okay, 30 years is enough of a buffer, but. Yeah.
So it's harder to reach financial independence as a young people. anyway, so financial independence. What are the strategies? For example, I at the moment, it's not guaranteed that I will keep aiming to financial independence this way. I'm trying to invest my money in passive investments, maybe in future some small amount in active investing or real estate investments and whatever. How do you plan to reach financial independence, Angelo?
So for me, it's also I also have a similar investment strategy like you. So 60% of my investments going to passive ETFs as well. Very simple strategy, one ETF, everything I need. And then the rest is some other things where also my channel talk about peer-to-peer lending, and then a small percentage of crypto and some cash just to have money for expenses and to take advantage of opportunities. But for me, I think the difference between the two of us is that you're a very high income earner, or you have been over the several past years. And for me, I would say I'm pretty average, but I was still able to, together with my wife, to accumulate enough over years simply because we discovered minimalism and financial independence a couple of years ago. And so it was perfect timing for us to kind of realize, okay, what are the expenses we don't need? What really makes us happy and what other stuff that we don't need? And a nice side effect of that was that we were saving more money. And then through discovering Mr. Money Mustache and financial independence, we were even more motivated, like, oh, great, now we have this savings rate of 70%.
I had to make a confession. I think when I met you and your wife, at the Financial Independence Week in 2018, your approach to financial independence like stuck in my head for a while. It was like few months later, Mr. Money Mustache published an article called "Money and Confidence Are Interchangeable," and you seem to have implemented exactly what I would later call the fire spectrum, or you don't have to wait until you are fully financially independent to start living the life as a financially independent person. Because as we know, the 4% rule and these things, they work. They were tools meant for traditional retiree. So you work, accumulate, then at one point you stop, you just watch television and wait for your money to cover your bills. But that's not what anybody in the FIRE movement wants to do. So yeah. I remember in your presentation, you said, well, we just think that we can generate money with our side gigs. We don't need much money. So you were like very on the frugal side of the FIRE movement. And you were already doing what you loved. And that was like, holy shit, I have a million in the bank and I'm struggling. And these guys, they probably have an order of magnitude less than I have, but they're already living their FIRE life. What am I doing wrong? So you seeded something. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. I'm very happy to hear that. So with us, it was like this at a certain point. So after I discovered financial independence and everything, and after like a year or so, what was it? Wait a second. When was the seminar? We met in 2018, right?
June 18. Yeah, I remember. It was like, my daughter was 3 months old, so I remember.
And in the end of 2017, we kind of realized that we were thinking about it like, okay, why are we trying to reach this point of financial independence, this magical number where all of a sudden, okay, you can just lie on the beach? why are we trying to reach this so fast and then continue like a job that maybe we don't enjoy as much. For me, it was an IT job in a hospital and it was just very repetitive. I didn't feel like I was learning a lot and I was making good money next to my side hustles. But I realized I wasn't enjoying it. And why don't we already, like we had, at that point, we already had like 6 or 7 years of living expenses saved up. So we're a very lucky position. And so I thought, okay, why don't we just, what would we do if we're already financially independent? What do we want to do? And the thing is, if you look at other people who reach that point, they work on something they enjoy. After 2 or 3 weeks on the beach, it's boring, or like you want to do something, you want to, I don't know, you want
six, 7 years to remember of you in accumulated something. Savings is a lot. I mean, you were already able to take some risk.
Yeah.
I think your power comes from being able to be extremely frugal. I used to also be super frugal 10, 15 years ago. Sadly, in Switzerland, there are some minimum, like Switzerland is not really meant for people who don't produce money. Even if, I mean, you need to have a lot of money. But here, if you just breathe, even if you don't buy anything and you have a family, yes. So that's something I'm missing. I'm missing the ability to dream about spending zero. When I was like 15 years ago, when I was 30, even less than 30, I remember I was able to live with 500 euros per month. So I looked at my 30,000 euros like infinite money. And with 30,000 euros, I can live 10 years. I mean, that's amazing. And if I can reduce to 400 per month, I can live 15 years. And for me, it was not deprivation, because that's something maybe we want to discuss or not, either now or in another episode, that if frugality is usually seen from the outside as deprivation, while for people who value their time a lot, it seemed like a superpower. It seemed like it's like when you go and work out. At first, of course, if you go running, you feel a lot of pain. But then once you are running every day, you actually crave for that pain. You want to go there. You want to feel the pain of working out. I don't know. But I mean, that was me a lot of years ago. Now I'm suffering not being able to be as frugal as I want. You are still frugal? Are you still able to save a lot and you enjoy it, or you feel deprived?
So we enjoy it a lot. Actually, the thing is, I wouldn't consider us frugal. We just have things that we value. And for example, one of the main advantages we have is we have a very low rent. So we have like a studio apartment, which is like 56 square meters and a balcony. And it's, for us, it's perfect. We can live well in, we managed to even create a separate room with like some sliding doors. My wife is working in the other room right now. I'm still able to record videos, which I never thought would be possible. And so it gives us so much freedom, this low rent. And when we need a bigger one, for example, when we have kids, then we're going to look for a bigger one. But it doesn't make sense to now already pay a higher rent every single month until then. And so we are able to save more. And I never feel like we're restricting in any way, because like we've been traveling a lot also in the past. Now my wife, she started a job as a full-time employee. So it's a little bit...
You're cheating.
Yeah, she started, but she loves the job. And for her, it's perfect. It was exactly what she needed, because being self-employed, you don't know exactly how much is coming in every month. And for me, it's been great. I really enjoy the freedom it gives me. And I'm used to this uncertainty in a way. But for her, it was just not the right
questions. Like, first, this is amazing. So I was, of course, joking. But there are people who say, you got bored, you came back to work. But first, if you follow the traditional path, you never know what your true self would like. If you try things, maybe then your wife decided that maybe self-employment is not for me and I want to do something I love. If I won't love anymore, I can quit. We don't have any rush. So this is perfect. This is amazing. If she wants to work 50%, she can. So that's amazing. Work is much better if you don't need all the money.
Yeah. And the thing is also, she, for example, she didn't want to pursue a career in the field that she actually studied for. She did a master's in information systems and management and business. And she's now doing more design work because she's very creative. She realized she really enjoys that. And it's
she's working not in her main field of study?
No. So it wasn't like a necessity. It was more like, she wanted to find a job and she managed to do it. And she applied and she learned all of this stuff online, all the skills she didn't learn in university. She taught herself with all the Skillshare classes and okay. Udemy and all this stuff.
Okay. The good places. So guides, yeah. Udemy, Skillshare, edX, Coursera, places where you don't see a Lamborghini, like that's amazing. Prices that don't end in a 7, that's amazing. I mean, those are the places where you want to be to buy
$50. No free webinars
with like catchy check boxes to put like your email and then upselling everything. So yeah, that's amazing. That's great. Is she still doing amazing videos on YouTube or not?
No, for her it was enjoyable, and she every once in a while I'm sure she's gonna make something, not primarily for her own YouTube channel, rather for some friends. She also helped a friend of ours, the ones that are living in Croatia actually, Anthony and Vanya. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, them. I remember. Sure.
Yeah. Sure. And so they launched a video streaming platform as well, IMO Live, and she did the design there. That's and she great. Helped them.
That's good to know. I will check this out. I remember Antonio and Vanya. Sure. Yeah. So how is your business doing? What you do?
So what do I do? This is so much fun to explain to family members usually. So now I always just say, okay, I do online marketing, because then you don't get any more questions. Because if I say, okay, I do some IT work here and there, then I have my different websites, then I make some money on Amazon merch selling t-shirts. And then I have some YouTube channels. Wow. And I have websites that earn income, and then everybody's, oh, how do you earn money on YouTube? How do you, it's just much easier to just say.
So, luckily, our audiences are a bit more advanced that like old uncle and auntie in Italy. So yeah, I mean, I don't want to, I don't know if you want to go into much detail, but I'm curious if you, is your job enjoyable? Is your income able to pay your bills and save some?
Yeah, that's the most important part for me. That was from the beginning, that was when I really felt free, when my online income could cover my living expenses. And I was in a lucky position that I reached that point pretty early, or with some previous projects. And then I was able to, for example, also start this, since I was always interested in finance, I was able to start this other project, my channel Peer-to-Peer Investing Europe, and the website, which was a very niche kind of project, but I just wanted to track it just for myself. And then I realized, oh, I'm really enjoying this. I'm getting positive feedback. And yeah, it was.
When I met you in 2018, you were the keto guy.
Yes.
How's that going? Are you still working?
I have to say, I kind of realized that just talking about, so we still, for us, it's a perfect lifestyle. So we just integrate that into our life, just like many things we discovered together. And then like advanced, like minimalism, and then financial independence, it's just things that we find useful, we integrate, and then just part of our everyday life. But I realized it wasn't, I don't know, I didn't enjoy talking about it as much all the time, because you're just repeating the same stuff.
Okay.
And to really have an impact, you have to do like one-on-one coaching.
Okay.
And that's very time intensive. And also I never promote products.
Okay.
Especially if I wouldn't buy it myself. For example, for keto. And I was a certain point, look, just eat natural foods and this and stuff. And I don't want to sell anything that I wouldn't use myself. I don't want to throw away money. We always got some sponsorship offers, and I didn't sell a course or anything. So I'm sure I would have gone another way, but I just didn't want to go down that route. And so I had a problem where I'm enjoying it, but it got to a point where I felt like, okay, where should I take this? Mm-hmm. I don't know if I want to do this long term, to just repeat myself and compete against the algorithm, which was just promoting some vegan stuff, exactly what I was trying to talk
that's
about.
That's painful and not rewarding.
And so it was really hard. Like there were many nights where I was lying in bed, oh shit, I didn't make a video in such a long time. And then all of a sudden, it was a couple of months, and then it was like 1 year, and I felt so bad.
1 year.
When I checked the channel, and I had all this positive feedback still, not easy.
You had something in the range of 10,000, even more.
30,000 something.
30,000 subscribers. Oh wow, that's a waste of following.
A couple million views, and yeah, but I know.
Okay. I know.
Let's see. Maybe we can relaunch it somehow. Yeah.
Yes, great. I mean, your story is amazing. Like then when I discovered that you jumped on the P2P landing, I don't want to say I was a bit disappointed, but I discovered that you were on the P2P landing world when I was like finding all the bad things about, and when platforms were going like bankruptcy.
Yeah, last year was crazy.
I hosted a friend for a guest post on my blog about P2P, which was essentially like it was a third degree investigation. Like, hey, what do you think about this and this and that? And luckily, like a few months later, the friend and blogger told me, you know what, Giorgio, thanks also to your questions, I did a bit of an investigation. I kind of quit P2P lending. So I'm going to ask you, well, this is becoming an interview, me interviewing you. It's not fun. I'm going to ask you, how did you get involved with P2P lending at the beginning? When? And then how did this thing evolve? And where are you right now with P2P lending? I don't, before you answer, I remember that on the same five in 2018, there was Klaus. Klaus is the kind of is the king of P2P lending.
Yeah, he has a website called Peer-to-Peer Banking. Yeah.
Peer-to-peer banking. I mean, he was like, in my opinion, a very good guy with an amazing way to explain things. Probably studying a lot of platforms without trying to sell you anything.
Yeah.
Like this is like not what how's he called, the other guy? Financially got to you. That guy was on the opposite spectrum, making a lot of money and then disappearing. So what's your current...
story?
Yeah, your story about P2P lending.
So it was like this. So I got started in, I think, in September 2017.
Okay.
I got started with Bondora and then I looked into Mintos, so the larger ones. And I have to say, I was also influenced by some other bloggers. So also Jorgen, for example. I remember I wrote him some messages on Facebook Messenger back then. And I have, sadly, that was also how I got into Investio in a way, which was the
one of those
explosion. Who... Yeah. Yeah. That like, hey, how is this possible? Like how, whatever. And he said, I went there. It's fine. Look, it was my own mistake. But the part that hurt me the most actually was, like, for me, it was okay. I took this stupid risk. I should have seen the signs before and I lost some money. That's okay. That's on me. It's my mistake. But the part that hurt me the most is that I also talked about it on my channel and the website. And it was a really important and painful lesson for me to never repeat this mistake again, because it feels way worse for me to know, hey, people were following me, and then you get positive feedback and you start to have these interactions and you build some friendships via email and comments. And then you feel partly responsible for this crap forever talking about them or basically promoting something. And it was a very difficult year last year.
Are you out of the field or you're still invested? Do you think that's something that can be, that's a good part of P2P lending?
Yeah. I definitely think there's a good part as well. It's just that it's a little bit, a lot of new fields in, let's say, finance that are not well regulated yet. And we can say the same, okay, you have, if you would talk about cryptocurrencies, you could say, sell a similar story, the thing is that in the beginning, I was very driven by, okay, the returns and stuff, and I didn't have the risks in mind because didn't have a lot of experience in the past to build on or a lot of stories, because this thing was just growing so quickly in that moment. Mm-hmm. So we didn't have a lot of people telling experience, hey, this happened 2 years ago, pay attention, blah, blah, blah. It seemed like these are honest people and this is how it works, you know. So I think we all learned a lot. And now what I realize is people are a lot more critical about everything. They're like, okay, yeah, well, great. But where's the financial audited financial statements and stuff like this? If there's no, we need the proof. Do you have an actual business model? And what you're buying is actually what you're investing in, you know. For me, it was also another mindset shift, is that I wanted to make sure that people know that my biggest part of my investments is in ETFs, for example. And so I started to incorporate that more and more. And the interesting part was that even though the channel was called Peer-to-Peer Investing, my ETF videos were the ones that were the most viewed and where I got the most positive feedback. And so at the end of last year, I said, okay, I'm going to make sure that now, like, I wanted to make sure that people know how I'm invested exactly. Like, I tried to share that already before. In November 2019, I did a video about my entire investment portfolio. Mm-hmm. And there also already showed, okay, here, and that back then it was still a crypto mistake, and now it kind of turned into It was a happy accident where I was able to realize some profits.
Which crypto mistake?
Well, the last couple of years were before, let's say, the end of 2019 or something. It was, I don't know if you realized, it was a bit of a bear market, and it didn't feel the best to be invested in speculative digital currencies.
So you quit at the bottom? No.
No, I didn't quit.
Okay.
I was holding the bags at that point.
Okay.
And I'm sure all others can also say that it wasn't the best feeling, because for me it was. I also shared that in a video that I wasn't set. In Austria, we have this taxation for cryptocurrencies, for Bitcoin, for example, where after 1 year of holding it, it's tax-free when you sell it. And so.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh.
And during the year, you have to pay at your tax bracket, so a lot, basically.
Okay.
So you have high motivation to hold it for 1 year. The problem is when it was at the top in the end of 2017, I was okay, like, rationally, I should rebalance, because this is just ridiculous. Like, what if something happens? But the other part of my brain was like, no, just wait. I'm sure everything is going to the moon anyway. So if you just wait the full year, then you can reduce your taxes. You don't have to pay taxes on this profit. And then, of course, it was in minus already.
Okay. So when did you jump in on the Bitcoin bandwagon? It was like during 2017?
In 2017, I already, like, if I think about it now, it was a bit, already a couple of years before then, I already bought, I think, 8 Bitcoin for €150 each or something. Wait. And then I sold it in the same year where I doubled my money, because I was like, okay, I don't understand this enough. And so, but you never know.
I've read an article about the guy, the famous guy who bought two pizzas for 10,000 Bitcoin. And he said he doesn't regret it, because there's no way he could have hold until today. There's no way. Like, I don't know if you know the story, probably everybody knows the story, that there's a guy who bought two pizzas for 10,000 Bitcoin. I once thought maybe I should go on a deep rabbit hole of who were the other people receiving those 10,000 Bitcoins? Because we all mock this guy who bought two pizzas for 10,000 Bitcoin. But then there were someone else on the other end of the transaction who received those 10,000 Bitcoins for two pizzas. And that's a rabbit hole. I never...
Holding on to it is the hardest part. I think it's the same with, if you look at people who just invested into Amazon from the beginning or something, you had huge crashes and you don't know how it's going to continue. And like, you see, in the past, it's so easy to make a lot of money. But when you're actually in the situation, it's a lot more difficult. You don't really have conviction that...
I think we are told a lot to hold when things go down, no? So you say, okay, this lost 50%, you should just hold. But there's not much information about how to hold when things go up a lot. So imagine the guy with 10,000 Bitcoins who bought two pizzas, and then a month later, maybe instead of $10, they were worth $100, like 10x. How do you not sell an asset who got 10x? I think this is tough. And it happened to me also with stocks or others. Like, I see plus 20% deal, I'm out. But things can go exponentially. Things will go exponentially at one point.
I have to say that's one reason why I don't invest into single stocks, but just ETFs. Mm-hmm. Because I know in Switzerland, you have very good taxation with capital gains. You don't pay any taxes on capital gains. We don't have that here. And most other European countries, you don't have that.
I know.
And so the thing is, like, I realized, okay, I can play around with single stocks as well. But oftentimes, then you have to think, this is the case. Should I take some profits? Should I buy more? Whatever. Just so much thought and time goes into it. And if you're interested in it, it's great. A friend of mine is very interested in the topic as well. And he has like over 100 stocks. It's no problem for him, but for me, it's too much time investment. And I know myself, I check the charts, like, it's not worth it. And I realized that if I sell, then I always have a 27.5% tax on the profit, which is now money I have less to invest. Instead, if I just buy an ETF, I just want to grow it long term, and the money that I don't can keep working for me
dividends
until
and
I'm retired and I need it or whatever. Like,
sure.
And so for me, it didn't make sense.
Sure. Having a high capital gain tax prevents you from jumping from investment and changing your mind. It's a more, maybe it would help me, because I'm changing my mind every other day, and having tax-free capital gains are. I also have friends who do stock picking, value investing. And I think that if I discovered finance thanks to those people, maybe I would also be reading statements, financial statements and documents at the moment. But I'm not doing this. And maybe I would be even more frustrated right now, where fundamentals seem to not matter much in current market conditions. Yeah. Anyway, I think we are jumping from topic to topic. This is the first episode, so we are just having fun and
trying to find the right groove still.
Yes, exactly. So
can I finish the peer-to-peer thing that we were saying? For me, it was also a bit of a mindset shift with the so for me, what was interesting to me was the income side. So okay, you can get like a cash flow of, let's say, 12% or 10 to 12% from an investment, and you can get that monthly paid out to you. And so this psychological, I thought, oh, wouldn't it be nice if I can cover my living expenses with this monthly cash flow? You know, this was something that's very attractive to me. But then I also realized in like the end of last year, I was thinking, okay, how does it really make sense? Also, my ETFs were paying out dividends. And I had a mindset shift. I realized, okay, this is still money I have to tax every month now, because like it gets paid out and I have to pay taxes on it. If instead I can keep it invested long term, it's more beneficial to me. And I can just defer those taxes until later on. And so I also switched my distributing ETF to accumulating.
That makes sense.
The same with ETF, with the peer-to-peer. I said, okay, I want this to be capped at 15%. This is like, it's still nice to have some monthly income, but I don't really need it. And I want to keep this taxable income as low as possible for the long run.
Now I'll tell you how my brain works, how I modeled the P2P lending in my brain. Yeah. It was like this. Okay, why am I getting 10, 12, 15% per year on my loans? If I get 12%, probably the guys who are getting the loan, they're paying double of that, because there are two intermediaries. There is the platform, there are the loan originators. So someone is paying 25%. I'm not talking about ethic, because I mean, I know that in US, for example, there are a lot of payday loans, or people who like short-term loans, or even there are things, or credit card loan, like when you don't pay your credit card, the interest
goes up to 20%. Overdraw your credit card or something. Yeah,
exactly. So 25%, that's okay. But so if I'm getting 12%, there is someone who's getting another 12, even more percent. And then I realized that in current environment, where interest rates are so low, why do people get this kind of loan? Where are they? I mean, yeah. I had a feeling that something was not. I mean, everybody can get an 8% loan almost everywhere in the world, unless you go to really like probably third world countries or what else. So I thought, this is not sustained. This seems like a Ponzi scheme. And some of them were Ponzi schemes. Some of them were pretty legit. But then I decided, okay, that's not for me. And then it's very sparse. I mean, you should diversify over different providers, and it's a lot active. It's not something super passive. So yes, okay, you might get 10%, but every now and then someone is not going to repay the loan. You have to put a lot of work. You probably won't leave more than 10,000 on each platform. It's really a lot of work. It seems like the modern coupon clipping. I wouldn't put $1 million there, for example, of course.
Sure.
So I decided, okay, that's not for me. So this is my how. Yeah, but most of the alternative investments, I then realized that they're not for me. So I should put cash under the mattress.
I mean, there's, for most people, like if they just invest into broad stock in market index over a long run, they're going to outperform most other people that try to do some other active strategies.
Yeah, and sure. So that's my model. That was my model. I'm like looking for a different model. That's my mental model.
No. And getting back to what you were saying, so you have to remember that the countries where the countries where these people are taking the loans, those are not Germany, Austria, Switzerland. I think you have a Swiss platform as well, but I think maybe you have 5% interest rate or something for these short-term loans or something. So it's not worth it. But actually, if you look at countries like you have Latvia, you have Poland, also, I think in part also Estonia, and then you have some more remote countries like, okay, Kazakhstan and many others, where you have interest rate, you don't have the easy access to a bank and to getting a loan that we have in more Western countries. And so you have to pay a lot more interest there. And that's why this alternative finance space there grew so quickly as well, because they realized, oh, there's an opportunity, and people either get a car loan, for example, and say, okay, you have the car as a security. Some others have like you have order, or you have uncollateralized loans, which are usually oftentimes like it could be like something similar to a payday loan, where it's like 1 month or something. Or some countries they even go there and they paid it in cash at the, when they got their check, and they said, hey, I want to celebrate this weekend already. I'm gonna pay it back to you in 5 days, and they come.
I mean, like, how many middlemen? I mean, I'm just trying to count the middlemen.
So the middlemen actually now.
So before the money, I mean, you loan 1,000 euros, whatever, before the money reach the people and then go back to you, there are so many people who to take
their cash. Not, I don't see it that way, no? Actually. So now I notice that a lot more lending companies, and the lending companies are the ones that then give the capital to the borrowers. A lot more lending companies, kind of they split up a little bit from the big ones, for example, from Mintos, and they started their own because they realized, okay, look, we have this business model, it works well, we have a name recognition now, and people can directly... We can skip the Mintos middleman, for example, and we don't have to pay them a commission for the loans, and they can directly do this.
So you can now have an account directly with the loan originators. Is loan originator the right name?
Yeah, okay. Loan originators, lending companies. Yeah.
Okay.
And there are many that have been doing this well for several years, for a decade. And so with Mintos, if, for example, we talk about the marketplace like Mintos, okay, yeah, there you have another middleman, which is Mintos, that take like, I don't know, 0.5% commission, 1% of whatever. For them to place it on there. But I don't, other than that, it's way, I wouldn't say that it's such an indirect investment as if...
It's really peer-to-peer.
Yeah, it's close enough there still, but of course, yeah. But for me, what I realized that, like, it's still a risky asset class, and there you have to make sure that you know exactly what are you investing in, what is it backed by, this lending company, their history, do they have audited financial statements? If they don't have that, then why not? Like, there might be, for me, I realized if there's some uncertainties, then it's better to stay away, because you should always assume the worst if there's some stuff that's not well explained.
Yeah, I remember back in, like, was probably beginning of last year, when the two or three major platforms went belly up. I remember like watching a couple of your videos. So you were probably like explaining it pretty clearly, and also apologizing if you sometimes happen to recommend it. And I really liked your approach. So kudos. There were people who were still like denying the fact that things were going south. And
yeah. People were attacking me. I remember on Facebook when I said, hey guys, this is why I'm leaving this. I'm trying to leave this. This is the stuff I found.
Oh,
I didn't
really?
Like
so
this.
It's like a cult.
And people say, you're just trying to talk down Investio and stuff like this. You're crazy. You're just somebody's hell bent on destroying him with his community power. I think I had, I don't know, 2,000 subscribers on YouTube. So I don't understand, but
community power.
We'll even learn. Yeah.
So, what are your goals? Like, what are you doing long term with your life?
Long term, good question. I mean, goals. Maybe have kids starting next year, potentially. That's also one thing, one reason why my wife is happy with the job now, because it gives her a bit more security to build an extra buffer even for that. And even for potentially, because for example, in Austria, we would get then some child benefits, and it would be easier for childcare afterwards. And so it's still an extra motivation for going down this route for a period of time. And she really loves it. She hopes we can continue after as well.
Austria is pretty generous with maternity and benefits for, Austria. I know I have friends who live and work there. I also work for an Austrian company. So, yeah. We should have met in Vienna, but sadly I had to cancel a couple of times my flight.
And why? I don't understand.
I don't know. That's just like, I don't know. Go out and check if you can. My next flight, like, is booked for early May. If it's not cancelled, I hope we meet.
How has your own mindset about financial independence changed over the last couple of years?
Okay, so how has my mindset? When I discovered the world of financial independence, I was like literally captured. And I thought that, okay, wow, now I need to find the exact number and I will just go head down until I reach that number. My blog was showing a progress bar, like I'm at 50%, 55, 60, 70. But now, I mean, I don't update that anymore. It reached 100% according to some virtual metric. And now, I mean, I'm of course not updating it because I have no idea. I have no idea. First, I have no idea how much our expenses will be in the future, because we have like huge decisions in our near and long-term future, which is we might want to have a second child. We love living in Switzerland, but we might decide to move back to Italy at one point. I think at this point we restricted our options to either Switzerland or Italy. There were a couple of years ago we were exploring maybe Portugal, maybe south of France, anything which was Mediterranean at one point. But then now we restricted this. Plus, so this gives us uncertainty. We cannot say we are clearly not financially independent in Switzerland, but we might be, we probably are, if we move back to Italy. So this is already enough to explode my brain. I mean, I am financially independent in Italy, but I'm not here. I'm pretty far from being FI here. So what is financial independence in the end? We could have been financially independent when we had a tenth of the wealth we have if we moved to Bangladesh. I don't know. So yeah, that's really an arbitrary point. Then I started questioning, by the way, what is financial independence? So according to the 4% rule, for example, okay, it's 25 times the expenses. But wait, should you consider taxes? Should you consider this? What about we have a daughter and the expenses grow? How do we anticipate expenses in the future? That's super messy. Plus, is the 4% rule holding up in the future? No, I don't know. I run some I run some numbers. If you were Swiss in before the dot-com bubble, and apparently that's not going great. Even if you were American and you started investing in 2020, or if you said, okay, I'm financially independent in year 2000 before the dot-com bubble, you would not be doing great. You would be slashing alpha at this moment in U.S. dollar. The Swiss franc gained a lot compared to the Swiss dollars to US dollar. So it means in Swiss franc, if you started investing in year 2000, today you'd be almost broke if you were taking 4%. Mm-hmm. So I also challenge that. So 4% seems too high for me in this current scenario. The final number is fuzzy in itself. So I have no idea what I'm doing. So I don't know. And then I realized that, okay, I cannot call myself financially independent. I probably can never call myself financially independent unless I really know future expenses. I have a kind of guaranteed low enough safe withdrawal rate. And then I realized, like you are doing, that maybe I should not aim to a fixed point in time or in wealth. And I should say, I'm not financially independent, but even in Switzerland, with this amount of money, I can live 15 years without having to work, maybe 17. And that's something. That's a lot. So why not taking advantage of this? Why not starting, reducing the work amount or meantime working on my side projects? It's much more fun to take entrepreneurship if you know that the worst case, if I earn zero for the next 15 years, in 15 years, I would say, oh, holy shit, I only have 100,000 left on my bank account. That's so relaxing. I know people who go the entrepreneurship way as a desperate attempt to get a life because they are in debt. They need things to succeed and quickly. Yeah. Having money, having saved and invested with some good returns, a lot of money, gives you a lot of power. Maybe it's not financial. Maybe one day we should celebrate the death of financial independence. But good habits of spending less than you earn, invest wisely, gives you power. power. Yeah, that's my short answer.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. Because even if you like just reaching this magical number, there's always uncertainty with everything you do. Like you said, your local currency could explode, whatever, yeah. Something else could happen. So you just have
unexpected
to...
Unexpected expenses. You don't know. Maybe tomorrow you lose a civil... someone sue you and you have to lose money or... I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, when we invest, we try to make the most informed decision based on the history, the longest possible time we can look backwards, what gives us the highest probability of having more wealth later on.
Even if you fix a lot of variables, you cannot be more than 95% sure that your plans are going to work. We might enter, a doomsday scenario where zombies arrive. So maybe Taleb is right. So you should always invest like 1 or 2% of your wealth in something which is unlikely. But if the right scenario happens to come, you are prepared. Like, I don't know.
Like
weapons and canned food. Like 0.5% of your wealth in weapons and canned food. Okay. No, I mean, I'm against weapon, of course.
But even if we don't reach that number, on the way there, you already have either regular income from your investments that you can use. That means you can work part-time, or you just have enough saved up and invested that, you're not forced to do a full-time job that you hate. You can say, I'm going to try this other thing, which I enjoy. I know it pays less, but this is not my primary motivation because I can take some money from here whenever I want. I don't have this high risk.
That's what I actually recommend to, financial independence, especially early retirement, like FIRE, is getting popular. Like I see many people talking about FIRE and many young people who are like 20 years old and are already thinking of the day they will stop working. I'll say, come on, no. No, you should not plan for it. And this might become dangerous. So what I say is like, FIRE is like running an ultra marathon, and you might never reach that. I mean, it's very tough to run 100 kilometers. But if you train toward that, and you accept that even the temporary results are like amazing, like you might be able to run 5K, 10K. You might get some freedom. Don't just depress yourself until you reach the final, like the magic land. And I'm talking more to my old self, because I thought that, okay, I should like go head down, work until I reach that point. Luckily, I started with this mindset 5 years ago. So I was already halfway through, I was already saving. If I were like at zero and I had started thinking that it will take 15 years, you cannot survive 15 years working things you don't like to reach a magical number.
Yeah.
So to all the kids listening, just don't aim to reach a particular number. Try to find something you enjoy. In the meantime, don't waste your money, save and invest. And if maybe in 5, in 10 years, you discover that the field you've been working for 10 years, like sucks, you hate everything, you cannot take it anymore, then you turn to your bank account and say, oh, wow, I have 300,000. Now I can buy my freedom. But don't start at zero thinking about the day you will stop working.
Yeah.
I don't know if you agree with me.
Yeah, I fully agree. Like, don't live in the future at some random point when you have that. Just enjoy the journey there. And I think for you, it's also something you enjoy. I'm guessing you really enjoy tracking your numbers and writing about it.
Sure.
Me, it's also, like, I really enjoy this progress. Like,
some people say, you're miserable because you're doing. No, I'm having fun. Now that I have a family, it's harder. But when when my wife and my daughter used to go to Milan for a week, I tried challenges. I want to spend zero for a week. I want to eat whatever I have left in the pantry. So for me, this is like, I don't know, it's like doing more abs when you have a good six pack. You crave for that. You hate to waste money. Yeah, every time you waste money, I think I've read on early retirement, probably it's Jacob Landfisker, the guy from Early Retirement Extreme, who said, we consider spending money a failure of solving problems with smarter means. That's like pam, like a pam. Every time you spend a dollar, you just fail to solve problem in a smarter way.
Sure.
So, but people can get confused because I'm also for delayed gratification. So I don't say don't live in the future. Okay, you shouldn't live in the future. But that doesn't mean YOLO, I waste
no,
all the
no.
money right now. So maybe this is something we should explain better.
Yeah,
Or
I
else
just
it
meant.
seems we are now saying, okay, don't save for the future, just have fun today. For me, having fun today means also planning a part of the future while not burning out.
So I meant from a mindset perspective that you don't just think, okay, then I'm going to be happy when I reach that point, then I can relax and I can do things I enjoy. Try to find a way to already enjoy your journey there more. And you do that by reaching a certain point, you have some FU money saved up, and then you can say, oh, can say to your boss, no, I'm not working on Saturday or something. And you can take the risk to switch to another position. And that already gives you so much freedom and so much more relaxation.
Yeah.
But of course, don't. I wouldn't say YOLO stuff. What's fun for me and for you probably is also when you find some creative ways, some things that you realize you enjoy it way more, even though something doesn't cost money or it costs less money.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
Like for me, it's a different kind of also. Like I enjoy it more than if I would have spent a lot of money on something expensive. For me, it's something if I can buy a nice steak, for example, in a supermarket and make it at home and make a really fancy dinner. I can make it ourselves and all the ingredients we want and make our own buffet. And I know I'm paying one tenth from a restaurant, and I know exactly what's inside, and we just enjoy it way more when we do this. We make it an experience together, and it's like this kind of.
It's even more resilient, because if you were depending on restaurants being open, you'd be suffering more at the moment.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, if you had 10x the wealth you have right now, would you be doing something different? Don't say no. I mean, I
no,
don't.
No, wait.
Something.
Something different, yes. I would say small things like this, where I would maybe be more likely to take an Uber everywhere, basically. I would do things that would save me time in a way. So instead of maybe taking public transport and spending 45 minutes on it, I would say, okay, I'm just going to take an Uber, and just in 10 minutes I'm there, and it doesn't matter if I pay €10 or something for the trip.
Mm-hmm.
I would say things like this, time-saving activities rather than lifestyle upgrades, because I don't feel like... So I really enjoy the process of where I'm right now, and I'm doing on a monthly basis what we're able to save, the two of us, this journey. And I think book also like maybe a more expensive hotel room, or I would spend less time on researching a good deal. But that's also something where I learned that when it's worth spending extra time, and when it's not worth doing that. For example, there used to be times where I spent a lot of time just hunting down some deal just to save like €10 here and there. But
maybe
if I spend an hour on that, it's not worth it, because I can spend the time working and I can make way more money than that. So you have to also realize this trade-off between time and money.
The right value, yeah.
And that's the same thing with investing as well. Like, what's the point trying to get 1% extra, but you spend hours and hours on it?
Mm-hmm. Unless you have fun, unless this is something you like. Unless that's something you can get skilled and teach, I don't know. Unless it becomes an asset in your portfolio of skills,
And you can sell a course on YouTube for it a 7.
Exactly. How to trade.
Professional trader. Yeah.
I'm getting so many ideas for future episodes, Angelo. So many spin-off.
I'm looking forward to it.
Nice. Should we call it done?
I think it's a good first episode.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah,
so,
I like it.
So, thank you very much, everybody, for watching our first ever episode of the Fire Mafia podcast video.
Yeah.
If you enjoyed the video, don't forget to hit the like button and to subscribe.
Oh, I always love to have to say this. Hit the like, smash that like button and subscribe.
And also, we're going to put the links down below to Giorgio's blog and to my blog and YouTube channel. And yeah, let us know, give us feedback. What do you want to hear more about? Let us know your thoughts about what we discussed in the comments.
Yeah, also questions if you have. Maybe next episode we will take a few minutes to answer some questions. Yeah. Angelo, it's been a pleasure.
For me as well.
So we are committed for 3 episodes, but if things go well, we will continue.
Yeah.
Bye-bye, guys.
Bye.